Okay, so we're just doing something a little bit different tonight. We're looking at a missionary couple, and they're just a little bit of a section of their lives tonight. We're looking at Jim and Elizabeth Elliott. A show of hands, who's heard of them? Okay, quite a few of you, but I only heard about them last year, so some people have heard of them, some haven't, that's fine. So I think we can learn a lot from them, hopefully. I've learned a lot from them from looking at their story recently, so I'm hoping we'll all be encouraged and inspired tonight as we just have a look at their lives and see if we can follow their example a little bit. We're not trying to idolize them tonight. We're just going to just see how their readiness to share the gospel, no matter what personal cost to them, see how that played out and see how we can learn from them. So we're just going to take a look at the work they did, how their faith motivated that work, and just see maybe how we can relate to that a little bit. But the bigger aim is to marvel at our God. So we don't want to put Jim and Elizabeth Elliott up on a pedestal. We want to see how God is glorified through how he worked through their lives in different ways. And we're also going to take a little bit of a look at Philippians. So if you've got a Bible nearby, that will help us as well. So it's just a few years of their lives we're going to look at. And as we step through the story, it'll be really easy to think that their lives are really far removed from our own. And in many ways, they are. There's a different time, different country, and possibly circumstances that none of us will ever experience. But we've got the same God and the same gospel, so I'm hoping we'll see some parallels and be inspired to join in their mission with them tonight. So we're going to just watch a little clip in a wee minute, just to kind of give us an overview of their story to help us get our heads around it. But just to give a bit of context, the Elliots were both missionaries. They're serving in Ecuador. They're working with the Quechua people in the Shandia region. I don't know if that means anything to anybody, but that's where they were. So they've been working there for a few years, and they're working with another couple called Ed and Mary Lou McCulley. And the biggest burden they had was for people who don't know Jesus at all, who'd never heard of him, and who don't have a Bible in their own language. So while they were there, they'd heard of the Oka tribe, which you'll see on the clip in a minute. They had a really savage reputation, really violent. All the tribes around them were terrified of them, and white people were scared of them as well. No one went into the Oka region because they'd be certainly speared to death. But that just made Jim and Elizabeth more compassionate for them. God was placing a burden on their hearts for them, and they just really felt that the Okas needed the gospel. Because of their violent reputation. So it was Jim and four other men who tried to reach them with the gospel, and the clip will show you what happened when they did that. Okay. I guess, like me, you might have had mixed feelings watching that. It's a tragic story in some ways, five young lives being cut short like that. Many people thought that at the time. Many people were outraged at what happened, thought, what a waste of these men's lives. Before they'd even got to mention Jesus' name, they were killed. And that is a valid point of view. I'm not trying to say that death isn't a tragedy, but I'm hoping tonight we'll see a different perspective on that, and we'll see how God was at work even in tragic circumstances. So on our handout, we're just going to step through the story a little bit. So we're on section one at the moment, A Heart for Unreached Peoples. So just to get a better idea of who Jim and Elizabeth were, they met at college at Wheaton, Illinois. At the time of studying, they both felt called to go to unreached peoples, people who hadn't heard the gospel, people who didn't have the Bible in their own language. They were both studying Greek, so they'd be able to translate the Bible into new languages. So that's where they met. Both were high-achieving students, like many of you here. They were both talented in other areas, music and sports and different areas. But in spite of having lots of different options open to them, they decided, they both felt called to go into full-time ministry, particularly overseas ministry in the mission field. There's a quote from Jim's diary at this time that reads, "All is vanity, below the sun, and a striving after the wind. Life is not here, but hid with Christ in God, and therein I rejoice and sing, and as I think on such exaltation." That was Jim Elliot's faith, that everything on earth is meaningless unless it's for Christ, unless it's for Christ's glory. He believed that life with Christ is the only life worth living, and so everything that we do on earth must be for him. His diary tells of him preaching at lots of different youth rallies in America, but they also show his frustration at their lack of fire and enthusiasm for the gospel. And you could see his longing was to go where they'd never heard the gospel before. There's a quote in your handout just underneath the heading. It says, "I only hope he, that's God, will let me preach to those who have never heard the name Jesus. What else is worthwhile in this life? I've heard of nothing better. Lord, send me." By this time, Jim and Elizabeth had met and fallen in love. They wanted to get married. They both felt called to be missionaries, as I've said. Both wanted to go to Ecuador. But in spite of that, in spite of being in love, they felt it wasn't right to get married at this time. They were at different stages in their studies, and they had opportunities to serve in different places in Ecuador. So it was actually another 5 years before they were able to get married after deciding that they wanted to get engaged. Elizabeth's actually written a book called Passion and Purity. It's about sex and relationships, and she used her own experience in that book. And she talks about this time where she'd fallen in love with Jim and they wanted to get married. And you can see that she longed to be his wife, longed to live with him. But what stands out more is her longing to serve Christ more. And that meant putting the engagement on hold for a few years. We're going to pause there, and I'm going to let you guys have a bit of a chat together. Just try to step into the story a little bit. Rather than me just telling you, it would be helpful if you guys imagine what it would be like for them and just kind of step into it a little bit more. There's a couple of questions on your sheet. So if you just, like we did this morning, if you just go into little groups, Lewis, you can join the group behind you. If you just go with your rows, that would be helpful. And just think of the first two questions on the handout. So what temptations or pressures do you think Jim and Elizabeth would have faced in making the decision to go? Think about what their friends would have been saying, what different options would have been available to them, and then think about that in your own lives. What pressures are there for us as we seek to serve Christ in our own lives? So I'll give you a few minutes for that. Okay, I might stop us there just to keep us moving. Okay, do any groups want to feedback what you chatted about? Thinking of the first question, what temptations or pressures they would have felt as they were deciding to go. This group on my left.
Their families might be reluctant for them to go.
Yeah. Others?
Temptations for their marriage and for their mission. Perhaps they date their marriage to put their mission first.
Yeah, with people maybe advising them against it, that maybe would have made them think that maybe that's not what God wanted for them. That's right. Others? Yeah. Thank you. And what about the next question? Do we see any parallels with our own lives?
You want to stay in comfort zone?
Yeah. Did others have the same thing? You want to stay in your comfort zone? Thank you. Okay, keep those in mind. We'll come back to them later. But thank you for thinking about those. Let's move on to section two, Ecuador and Operation Oca. So I've put a little timeline just underneath the heading, just so you've kind of got an idea of what's happening. So you can see by 1948, they've arrived in Ecuador separately. They're both serving God in different places. And they're spending their time meeting people, building relationships, and learning the language as well, all with the aim of sharing the gospel with people, telling people about Jesus. Eventually, they're able to move to the same place. The opportunity comes up for them to serve with the Quechua people. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but that's how I'm going to say it. And so that's when they get married, and in the course of time, they have a baby, Valerie. So they've not forgotten their heart for unreached people. Over the course of their time in Ecuador, they'd heard of the Oca people, and Jim had felt particularly a pull towards them. Despite their savage reputation, he wanted to share the gospel with them. And it's while they're out there that they meet four other missionary couples, the Saints, the McCullies, the Udirians, and the Flemings. And when they, through other people, find out where the Oca tribe live, and from September 1955, they start what's called Operation Oca, the plans and the preparations to make contact with them. So no contact with the Oca tribe had ever ended well for the outsider before. So they had to plan really carefully. They didn't want to just barge in, because that would have that wouldn't have gone well for them. So what they decided to do was they planned to fly. They had a little plane, so they flew over the tribe's territory, and over the course of time they would drop parcels of food and clothes and tools and different things like that. They'd fly low enough so the tribe could see their faces, and they made sure that the tribe knew that they were friendly, and they meant they didn't mean any harm, and so that's what they did for the next few months. And the tribe seemed to love this. They welcomed the partials, they sent things back up, and they would look out eagerly for the plane. So the missionaries were really hopeful this was going to go well. So after months of this, learning the language, and praying and planning, the 5 men decide it's time to make their first attempt at making face-to-face contact with the tribe. So in spite of the promising partial drops and all these things, they didn't forget the savage reputation that the tribe had. They knew full well that their lives could be taken from them, and their wives knew this as well, so there was fear in there as well as excitement about meeting them. They went in with weapons, but Jim was determined not to use them against them. They had guns, but Jim was convicted that if it came to it, it was better for he and the missionaries to die, as they were ready for heaven, rather than the Ocas to die. So they had guns, but they were just going to be used as a deterrent in case things got violent, but they were determined they wouldn't use them for harm. Not forgetting the women, they shared the men's faith. They didn't go with the men, but they trusted God just as absolutely as their husbands did. There's an extract from Elizabeth's diary from the night before the first meeting. It reads, "The other women and I talked one night about the possibility of becoming widows. What would we do? God gave us peace of heart and confidence that whatever might happen, his word would hold. We knew that when he putteth forth his sheep, he goeth before them. God's leading was unmistakable up to this point. Each of us knew when we married our husbands that there would never be any question who came first. God and his work held first place in each life. It was the condition of true discipleship. It became devastatingly meaningful now." I'm going to pause again for another couple of questions. Before we go into their first meeting with the tribe's people, let's just have a think about what could be going on and what's motivating them. Why are they doing this? And also have a read of Philippians 3, 7-14. See how that was played out in their lives. I'll just give you a few minutes for that. Okay, let me interrupt there. Sorry, you look like you're having good conversations, but I'll move us on. Great. I won't ask for feedback there, just because I want to move us on. So if we reached the night before, there's fear and excitement. And so on January 6th, 1956, the five men, they land on the beach just near the Upper Territory. They wisely decided not to just swoop right into their dwelling places. They just decided to land on a beach nearby. So what they did was they flew low over their territory before landing on the beach, just to shout out an invitation for them to come and see them. And when they landed on the beach, they just waited in hope that that people would come, and they weren't disappointed. You saw on the clip that was real footage of their meeting with three tribes people. So there was an older lady, a younger woman, and a young man in his 30s. So the group spent the day together, they chatted, they played games, they took photos, and they even took the man up for a spin in the plane, because that's what they wanted to do. So they were full of joy and excitement after that first meeting. It went better than they ever could have hoped, and they hoped that that would open up an opportunity for them to meet others in the days that followed. You'll see in your handout just above section 3. This is from Jim's diary the night before he was killed, which was the day after they met the first three tribes people. It says, "Oh, the fullness, pleasure, sheer excitement of knowing God on earth. I care not if I never raise my voice again for him, if only I may love him, please him. If only I may see him, touch his garments, and smile into his eyes. Ah, then, not stars nor children shall matter, only himself." It's quite chilling to read that extract, knowing what happened the very next day. The last the woman heard from them was the next day they flew over the tribe again, and on their way back they saw 10 men walking towards the beach where they were about to land. So they were full of excitement at this happening, but that was the last the wives heard of them. Those 10 men did come to the beach, but they speared all five men, and all of them were killed. No sense that could be made at the time, it just seemed to be going so well, and there was so much excitement, so much expectancy about what was going to happen. So for years they couldn't make sense of what had happened. But as the years went on, as they met the tribes people later, the story came out. What had happened was that of the three people they'd met 2 days before, the man and the young woman were wanting to get married, and so the older lady was their chaperone. But on the way back to their tribe, the couple had kind of ditched their chaperone so they could get alone time, and had arrived back in their territory on their own, which angered their tribe, who didn't want them to get married. And the way the Yokas dealt with their anger was to spear people, just to murder. And so the man, to avoid getting speared to death, said that the reason they were separated was because they were fleeing the white men on the beach. So instead of him being speared, the tribe decided to go and kill the missionaries, which is what happened. Tragedy, and they couldn't make sense of it at the time, but that's how the story unfolded later. So on to section 3 now, Unfailing Trust in God. That's the title I've given for Elizabeth and the other ladies, the other wives and family that were left behind. They could have responded in lots of different ways. They could have responded in despair. Elizabeth could have packed up, gone home, too devastated to carry on with her work. She could have taken that as a sign that God didn't want her there. She could have wanted revenge. She could have, there could have been so many different things she did. But that's not what happened. She stayed. So the quote just underneath the heading is an extract from her diary. "No tears could rise from the depths of trust which supported their wives." I'm sure they did grieve. I'm sure it wasn't that's fine. We trust God. I'm sure they did grieve, and it's right to grieve over death. But I think what the quote shows is that in spite of this tragedy, in spite of these women losing their husbands, the fathers of their children, they trusted God in spite of that, and in spite of that heartbreak. They were prepared to give up everything for the gospel, and they had just been asked to give up their husbands. So for Elizabeth, she carried on where she was working, as usual, for the next little while. She continued with Keep to Her People, and she was working with them and sharing the gospel with them, as she had been before Jim's death. But a year later, she gets two surprise visitors. She gets two Oka women appear at her house, asking her to move to their settlement. Elizabeth quite rightly asks, won't I be killed? Won't your people spear me? And they laugh and reply, no, you're our friend. So months later, after spending time learning the Oka language and getting to know their customs, Elizabeth and Nate Saint, one of the other missionaries, his sister Rachel, moves with Elizabeth and Valerie into Oka territory, and that's where they stay for 2 years. Rachel actually stays her whole life living with them, but Elizabeth stayed with them for 2 years, living and ministering among the people who killed her husband and her friends. It's an incredible story, isn't it? It's just seeing God's grace like that. It's just quite overwhelming, I find. Through them sharing the gospel with these people, as you saw in the clip, these angry, murdering people, they're completely transformed by God's grace and become missionaries themselves. So you see they're baptizing missionaries' children later on, and they're even ministering to other tribes in the region. One of the tribesmen had said to Elizabeth that had she not come to them with the gospel, they would have finished each other off, they would have killed each other, because that was a habit they were in. They didn't know how to deal with their anger in any other way but to kill. So Elizabeth lived with them for 2 years. As I said, after that she goes back to Shandia for another 2 years, and then after that she went back to America, where she lived for the rest of her life. She wrote lots of books. She was a broadcaster and an in-demand speaker, and she remained faithful to her Lord her whole life. She died in June last year, after a battle with dementia, but was faithful to the end. She's been called one of the most influential Christian women of the 20th century, and countless people have been blessed by her ministry. So that's their story. I want us to think about ourselves again. So last two questions on your handout. Have a think about the two different perspectives you could have on the Eliot story. We kind of thought about that at the beginning of the evening. Two different perspectives, and then think about how the way God used them, used their story, how can that encourage us in the ministry that he's given us today. Okay, I'm going to interrupt us there again. Sorry to keep interrupting. Hopefully these are good conversations you're having, and feel free to carry them on after we're finished here. I really hope these conversations have been helpful. I hope hearing the story has been helpful. I found it extremely helpful and extremely inspiring. I hope we're not leaving here thinking, wow, what amazing people Jim and Elizabeth were. I hope we're leaving here thinking, wow, what an amazing God we have, who just works everything for his glory and is at work in spite of the tragedy and things that seemingly go wrong in our eyes. So Jim and Elizabeth were ordinary people, but he is an extraordinary God, and so he used them as they were, and uses us for his glory as well. So we can rejoice over that. That's all I'm going to say on that. The titles of two books at the bottom of the handout. The first one is Through the Gates of Splendor, and that's telling the story of what we've just done tonight. That's by Elizabeth Elliot. And the next one on the sheet, The Savage My Kinsman, is the story of when she goes back to live with the Yorkshire tribe. So if you want to get, I don't think they're on the books all, are they?
You can sign up for through Gates of Spain, they can sign up on the
books. Great. So yeah, if you want to have a read, it's a good one.